So Tim John Booth, you sit before me to explain the wonderful, fantastic collection of songs that appear on Living in Extraordinary Times. Welcome, how are you?
Oh, I'm all right, Janice. How are you, my dear?
Good. Yeah, I'm fine, thanks. You don't live here anymore, do you?
No, California.
California. Why did you choose there?
I met my wife there 22 years ago, and I'd always kind of promised that we'd come back at some point for her. When our eldest was 16, it was like, okay, we can bring him back now. We can go back.
Do it.
It's for the land, really, as much as anything. We just love the nature, living in like a big national park, and it's fantastic. You know, coyotes come through our land every day, and we see mountain lion and rattlesnakes, and so I moved there for the land.
And nature is inspirational.
Always. Oh, amazing. The most. I was brought up in the country, in Yorkshire. And, I couldn't live in the city, really.
Well, Yorkshire, I mean, what a fantastic county that is. It's just amazing, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, we rented a farmhouse 2 weeks ago in the Dales and started recording new songs and jamming, writing. And it was amazing. We were in the middle of nowhere, you know, just millions of rabbits and different birds and just recording. It's great.
Well, that's interesting to know that you're already onto the next album.
Mm-hmm. We never stop writing. We just love writing. It's what we do it anyway, so it's what we do.
Well, we're going to hear a track from the album now. And this is, I love this, Many Faces. There's only one human race, Many Faces.
There's only love that's strong enough to rescue us from self-destruct. You don't think so, but we're all the same. You don't think so. You've got skin in the game, we're in sync, so we're afraid of change. That's just how it is. My brother's mad at me, our rooms are two more dead canaries. I'm right, why can't he see right to the bitter end? My God, what's his name, says your God is just calamari. My God's new to this game, don't know who to blame. You don't think so, but we're all the same. You don't think so. You've got skin in the game, we're in sync, so we're afraid of change. That's just how it is. We see
That's James and Many Faces. And it's true, isn't it? Many faces, but there is only one human race.
Yeah, I think so. That song was written after Trump announced he was going to build a wall. Mm. And it just really upset me. Mm. And so that lyric just kind of came out, I think, from that response to that. I've had that experience too of being on stage where you look out and you just go, there's, you know, 20,000 people in front of you, but it actually feels like there's only one thing in front of you. Mm. It's quite amazing when that happens.
Well, I always think we're just one big family, really, aren't we?
I think
we should be.
Well, it's the difference is how you look at people, isn't it? If you look at people and see differences, then when you see tribes, and it's a shortcut to racism or to to seeing people as other, as separate from us. If you look at people and see similarities, then it's a really different approach. And that's the leap of consciousness that we actually need if we're going to prevent war or prevent self-destruction. And it's just, we at some point one has to make that choice of whether you're going to look at people and see differences and alien others, or you're going to look at them and say, oh, really, they've got my fears. And they may look different to me, but they've got all my worries, all my concerns, all my desires. It's all the same.
But you're living there, so you must. I mean, we're hearing the news. We hear Trump things every single day. We wake up and we go, oh, right, what's he said now? What's it like living there?
You have to be careful how you digest the news. Otherwise, you'd go crazy. You know, I've used this metaphor that if you stare at Medusa directly, you turn to stone. Yeah. So I digest Trump through the comedians a lot of the time. Stephen Colbert and John Oliver and Samantha Bee. And
yes.
Two directly political songs on this record, one called Hank, one called Heads.
Yeah.
And that song is really almost a thank you to the comedians for helping me be able to digest Trump in a way that doesn't just bring you down.
Well, Hank is the opening track on the album, such a powerful track.
It's pretty direct. Trump kept turning up in different songs because he was coming to power as we were writing this album. Mm. And I kind of, in the end, isolated him to a couple of songs.
The artwork. Now, I find the cover particularly fascinating because it's very curious, it's very beautiful, but it's a wee bit horrible as well.
It's a hand grenade with flowers blooming out of it. I think that's the kind of the essence of the album. The album's, you know, we're living in extraordinary times.
Mm.
And on the surface of it, you know, things like Trump and Brexit are very divisive, explosive things, but some very positive reactions can come out of the poison. And that's the positivity of the album. And that album sleeve took a long time finding. I can assure you, I had to fight for that one. We went way over budget.
Really?
So yeah.
But he can't come cheap, Magnus.
No, he didn't come cheap. But it's probably the best album sleeve we've ever had. I mean, it's so beautiful. So I think we feel it's worth it.
So 15 studio albums in, and you know, cast your mind back to 86. It would be, wouldn't it, Stutter? How different were those times to these times?
I mean, when you're making your first album, it's like you're giving birth for the first time. You don't know what you're doing. You're terrified. You're going to mess up. You know, I can tell you how we were different. I think we were in Thatcher's Britain at that time too.
Well, you were, yes, and you were very vociferous, weren't you?
I mean, I've only written 8 political songs, probably. But yes, one of them was definitely about Thatcher, and there was another one as well. I don't like them as a genre. I don't listen to, you know, unless they're by Dylan or that great song For What It's Worth. That's a great political song. Mm. But sometimes things come out of your unconscious, and you just, you know, my lyrics come from my unconscious. I don't choose to sit down and write a song about something. And when you live in turbulent political times, that comes out of the unconscious. So you just have to follow it, and it becomes your, you know, I always have a duty to follow my muse, or I think they'll leave me if I don't. that's what happened in that case, and that's what happened in 1986.
When you were bright-eyed, bushy-tailed and signed to factory.
Yeah, there you go.
And, of course, looking back, I mean, it was a great era of music, you know, the Smiths and lots of other stuff going on. And, in fact, the Smiths were very supportive, weren't they?
Really supportive, yeah. Morrissey kept championing us, calling us the best band in the world, you know, as he does. And there's been a few, I think, since then. And they were. I mean, the New Order were too. New Order took us on tour. The Fall gave us support gigs. I mean, Manchester was the very bands looked after each other, gave each other the opportunity to be seen. And we did the same later with the Manchester Scene bands, like the Happy Mondays. We took them on tour and the Carpets. So it was quite a nurturing. There was competition, but it was healthy competition.
Being quite nostalgic, actually, but nostalgia does my head in. Do you enjoy going backwards, or is it always forwards, positivity and forwards?
Pretty much forwards. I think we do get some stick for this when we've got a lot of new audience who've come for the new records we've done in the last few years.
Yes.
Because we're on a good run. And
I
then
think
we've
just
got
getting better and better.
And then, thank you. I think that's true. I think this is probably one of our best, if not. Yeah. Definitely in the top three or four of our best records.
I would say so.
And then what happens, of course, then is at festivals we get the crowd who want to hear the nostalgia songs, and they get really upset if we aren't going to play them. We don't really deal in nostalgia. We don't want to be a heritage band.
No.
We feel we do play some of those songs, but we change the set every night. You know, we don't do performance as theatre, where you do the same thing each night, even the same conversations between songs each night. And some people love that because they get that the gig in Llandudno is going to be totally different to the gig in Glasgow. Yeah. The gig on a Friday night is totally different to a gig on a Monday night. We rotate the songs, we change the set list around, and we keep the thing as a living piece of communication rather than a static piece of nostalgia theatre act.
The wheel.
And sit down. One of the funniest things I've ever had to do was introduce you on stage in Guildford at Guildfest. And the announcement I had to make before I introduced you was, if anybody's ordered bedding plants, can you please collect them from the stall? Hey, here's James!
I remember that gig. Amy Winehouse was opening for us, I think, that night.
I listened to you when you were talking to, was it Nihal on Five Live?
Mm-hmm.
And it was something I related to enormously, because in our jobs you have to be away from home. And it's heartbreaking, isn't it? When you have to do that goodbye and you see your child waving goodbye and it's, you sob. You know, but you don't want to show them that you're feeling heartbroken.
Yes, in that interview it was about the song on this album called Coming Home, which again I wrote for my unconscious, because I think I'd been in a bit of denial about how upset being away from my boy made me. I only go away for 3 week blocks, and when I'm home I'm fully home for him, and often my wife goes away and he's with me for a 3 week block, and we have a really close relationship. And really from the age of 4 or 5 he's been used to me going away and then being back fully as a parent. And he would pretend to me that he was okay with me going away to make me feel better. He would lie to me to protect me. And I discovered this after a year or two when I came home, when one period where I had to be away longer. And he, when I came home and he just, you know, fell into my arms crying. And I realized he'd been protecting me. And so I wrote this song. And I didn't know how emotionally I felt really about it until I wrote it and then came to sing it. And then then got interviewed by him and burst into tears and talking about it, because it's like, you know, you get on with it. It's I have to make a living and I love what I do passionately, which is, you know, many people have to leave their kids to go away and work at some awful job that they don't love at all. So I'm in a much better position than most people with this one. But yeah, I find that one pretty devastating. I think anyone can relate to that, though. You know, we put our kids into schools, and most schools fail, really. Most schools do not follow a children's natural inquisitive intelligence.
No.
Most schools do not really see an individual there that needs to be supported and flourished in the same way that a parent does. And so we all have to say goodbye to our kids on a daily basis in a way that I think unconsciously most of us are not very happy with.
Yeah, that's so true. Would you do a solo thing again, or Booth and the Bad Angel?
Oh, I would, I mean, Angelo, who I wrote Booth and the Bad Angel with, I mean, he turned down everybody. I mean, I was incredibly lucky to get a record with him, so I don't expect that to happen again. He turned down Bowie and Leonard Cohen, and you know,
he is amazing, isn't he?
So he's remarkable, and I got a record with him, so I feel blessed on that one. But I'm I'm always up for writing. I love writing. I was writing an album with somebody, but it kind of fell apart, really, because the last few James records have got so intense and so demanded a lot of my time. And so I kind of, it kind of went on the back burner. So I haven't really finished that record or seen it through, and I'm not sure if it ever will.
And would you act again?
Sure, if the right thing came. I was offered something last year, but it was too much of a kind of, it was a bit too much of a British sitcom, and it meant being away from my family to get more.
Really?
But if something I couldn't turn down came my way, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And finally, how do you think Leeds are going to do this season?
Well, it's, I don't mind, as long as they play good football. That's the thing, is I love watching good football. So when Leeds are playing rubbish football, I'd watch Barcelona, you know. And now I'll watch Liverpool, because Liverpool are playing such spectacular football. And now Leeds are playing really good football, and I love watching it. It's great. He's such a, clearly a maverick manager. Mm. And but he has been known to start teams off brilliantly and then it slightly fall apart. So who knows? But the way he's got them playing at the moment is inspirational. And his, you know, just hearing his training session where he made them pick up litter for 3 hours. Did you hear that one? He made them pick up litter for 3 hours to get the idea that most people who come to a football game have to do a job like this, and they're paying good money for a ticket, so you better be entertaining and you better play football, you better play your hearts out. And that was his first, one of his first training sessions with the team. I just think that is fantastic. So, you know, immediately he's won my respect. And so I hope and think Leeds may have a manager who gets them into the Premier League this season.
Two very quick things. How's Deborah Knox Houston fitting in?
She's leaving.
Oh no! She just joined.
She totally fitted in, but she's been made an amazing offer she can't refuse.
Really? She's so good.
And she's so good. She's trained up her best friend to stand in for at least to come in. And basically, so
that's good of her.
Chloe Alper, who's a wonderful singer in her own right, and so she's coming in, and they're doing a handover around about the next gig or two.
That's fantastic. You're doing it.
Yeah, we were upset, but we don't know if it's permanent. But we're treating it as if it's permanent. But and it's the secret offer that she's got, so we can't talk about it.
And how's Mr. Eno, Mr. Brian Eno, your special relationship with him?
He's very fine. Good. Very fine. Just good. Full of mischief and magic. It's always like going to the wizard's cave whenever I go to see Brian. Totally unexpected. I can't even tell you what we did about 2 weeks ago.
It was, why?
We had to sign a non-disclosure act.
Oh.
But it's just like I go around there, you know, going like, should we go and have a meal? And instead it's like, well, how about if we go and do this? And it turns out to be something just completely bonkers and crazy and wonderful. And so I, you know, very fine.
Now do us a favour, pick the final track. I can't decide whether to go for Hank for Mask or Backward Glances, which is a bonus track.
Oh my goodness. Well, the other song I'd love you to play at some point will be Heads. Anyone hears that, they wouldn't get that it was James, basically. And I always love those songs where people go, what is that?
All right, Tim. Lovely talking to you. And you take care of yourself, and love to the rest of the band.
Thanks, Janice.
take back.
From Living in Extraordinary Times, and thank you to Tim Booth from James. What a lovely human being he is.